This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiji Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Some of them are very scared here in their rooms. Like the whole day they remain indoors. That's some of the directions that have been given by the authorities here.
That's Michael Njomo, a Kenyan student in China's Wuhan city, on what it's like to be on lockdown because of the coronavirus. Details next. Also, medical experts say in Nigeria, a successful surgery was performed on a most complicated case of conjoined twins separation. We have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, in an effort to contain the coronavirus, Wuhan, the Chinese city of about 11 million people, has locked down thousands of foreigners, including African students, most on scholarships. They are now trapped in a city where the virus was first detected and continues to spread. Rael Ombor reports from Nairobi.
28-year-old Michael Njomo arrived in Wuhan City last September. He applied for a competitive scholarship to study administrative management and was awarded it after several attempts. The new coronavirus emerged just when he was settling in at Huanzhong University of Science and Technology. The WhatsApp group for Kenyan students in China stopped talking about academics and started checking on each other and sharing information about the disease. He says the death toll kept rising, and before he knew it, the city was under lockdown. He says he and his colleagues are afraid to circulate in the city.
Some of them are very scared here in their rooms. Like the whole day they remain indoors. That's some of the directions that have been given by the authorities here. If you pay much attention on that, I don't know what will happen to you because there's so much information from different people, and the more you reason to them, the more you pay attention, the more scared you become.
Njomo and his colleagues spoke to VOA via a WhatsApp call from a room they said they shared. Some countries have started evacuating their many thousands of citizens stranded in Wuhan. Njomo and other Kenyans are still not sure of their fate, but are hopeful.
If a situation comes like we can be evacuated from Wuhan and to a safer place, everybody will accept that. Maybe somewhere like the embassy, somewhere like in Beijing or something. It's okay. It's not that far from Wuhan to Beijing, but I don't know what the plans that our ambassador has for us.
John, not his real name, a final year student of engineering at Huanzhong University, was meant to come home in the next couple of months. He questions Kenya's capacity to deal with the virus if it made its way to the country and said he preferred they stay in China.
Everyone would like to go back home, but again you look at where your home is and you are also not sure with your status regarding the disease. To me, I think it's better just to stay here and ensure that I'm safe wherever I am, because you might go back home and you take it to everyone. And as you know, home facilities are not that good to handle the situation.
Kenya's Ministry of Foreign Affairs says 85 Kenyans are stuck in Wuhan. In a press statement, the ministry said the Kenyan embassy in Beijing is in touch with the Kenyan citizens who have been affected by the lockdown in Wuhan. The foreign ministry warned Kenyans not to travel to China unless it was absolutely necessary. As some airlines suspended flights to China, Kenya Airways, the national carrier, said it will not suspend its flights to China. The announcement came just after Kenyan ambassador to China, Sarah Sereb, called on the airline to stop flights to the country until the virus is contained. At a briefing for journalists this week, Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention Director John Kengasod said that if the virus makes its way to African countries, it would be hard to contain.
The surveillance systems are as good as our health systems in our member states. And we all know that we are at very different levels of strength in the member states. Some countries have very strong surveillance systems, some have weak surveillance systems, and some we are working with them to strengthen those systems there.
Kenya reported Tuesday the first suspected case of coronavirus infection in January. The Ministry of Health said Thursday it sent samples to South Africa for further tests. Sudan, Ethiopia, and Ivory Coast are the other countries that reported suspected cases. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
The latest round of talks among Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sudan in Washington has stretched into a fourth day as the parties struggle to reach an agreement on a massive hydropower dam project on Ethiopia's Blue Nile River. The meeting is the latest attempt to resolve issues on the operation of the dam, an issue that has triggered concerns of a water war between Egypt and Ethiopia. The meeting was scheduled for Tuesday and Wednesday, but has continued into today. Ethiopia and Egypt have been negotiating for years, but several sticking points remain, including how rapidly Ethiopia will fill the reservoir. Cairo fears that quickly filling the reservoir could threaten its source of fresh water. U.S. involvement in the dam issue came about after Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi last year requested that President Trump help mediate the conflict. The U.S. Treasury has not released a statement on the latest round of negotiations, and it is unclear what the next steps would be for the parties. Nigerian twin girls joined in the chest and abdominal regions are now living virtually normal lives, weeks after being successfully separated at the state-owned National Hospital. Medical experts say the operation was the most complicated case of conjoined twins separation ever performed in Nigeria. Timothy Obiezu reports from Nasarawa, near Abuja.
An event in Abuja to announce the successful separation of 17-month-old Nigerian twin sisters, Goodness and Mercy, starts on a celebratory note. The mother of the twins, Maria Martins, was not celebrating when she learned her girls were conjoined. She says their condition was undetected during pregnancy.
Because none of the scans showed that they were joined. The doctors didn't know that they were joined. They only told me that they're in one place and using one placenta.
After delivery through a cesarean section, the girls were referred to the state-owned National Hospital from the medical center here in Nasarawa, where they were born. At the hospital, pediatricians and medical experts studied and nurtured them for a year before planning their separation. During that period, Mariam says coming home without her babies was not easy.
When I came back, I didn't want people to come and see me. I was ashamed of myself. I felt I've committed a big abomination. At that time, I didn't even know that it happened in some places. I thought I'm the first. What have I done for me to be punished in this way? If people are coming to me, I feel they are mocking me. Shame.
The girls are the first conjoined twins to be successfully separated at the government-run specialist center. The surgical separation of the twins, which lasted 13 hours, took place last November and was handled by a 78-member medical team. The girls were then monitored by hospital authorities for any post-surgery complications before finally allowed to go home in January. Emmanuel Ame is the pediatric surgeon who led the team.
But for them, the size of the liver that was there really was actually the size of two livers joined together.
Okay.
In terms of separating it, we had very advanced equipment that helped us to separate it very quickly without losing much blood.
The conjoined twins phenomenon is extremely rare, approximately one in 200,000 births. In the last decade, only 15 cases have been officially reported in Nigeria, and the chances of survival for conjoined twins after separation are also usually slim. Nigeria's health minister, Osagie Emmanuel, says the successful separation of the Martin twins is a testament for Nigeria's health system.
We have demonstrated to ourselves that yes, we can do it, and that demonstration will lift and increase the confidence in the health sector of this country.
Every year, Nigerian citizens spend millions of dollars to access healthcare abroad. Health authorities want to reverse that trend. Successes like this could be the game changer. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Nasarawa.
Uganda has introduced e-passports and an online application system for those seeking to acquire a passport for the first time or a renewal. Officials say the new system will help curb fraud and make it easy to apply. Citizens often have spent months to receive passports or paid bribes to get them processed. Mugume Davis Rwakarinji reports from Kampala, Uganda.
35-year-old Richard Nyombi says last year he was made to pay a double the cost of acquiring the passport because of the long procedures.
So what happened? The process is a little bit hectic, that you have to pass through the LC1 acquire stamps, LC2, LC3, the division. So I saw it a little bit hectic, so I acquired the personnel that helped me do the staffing and the documentation. I had to pay some money, but then it took something like 2 months to get the passport. So it's a little bit hectic.
Ordinary passport in Uganda costs 250,000 Uganda shillings, or about $70. Brigadier Johnson Namanya, the Commissioner for Citizenship and Passport Control at Uganda's Internal Affairs Ministry, concedes that unfortunately such cases were also common in the past.
There were gaps where somebody would say, pay 400, then I process your passport, which is 250. So now there is no requirement for all those shortcuts and being cheated as Ugandans. You paid only once to URA through the mobile app, so through this online system, and there is no need to pay any more money. We hope that if the system is efficient, even you, the public, even you Ugandans, you will not find a need again to be bribing your way through.
URA stands for Uganda Revenue Authority, a government body responsible for collecting taxes. Obiga Mario Kania, the Internal Affairs Minister, says the new system is fast and will help serve many Ugandans in the shortest time possible.
We have so far, in just 1 month, because of that online service, issued 83,233 passports as of 27th January 2020. And if you compare this with the previous statistics, where we had issued 15,000 passports in a similar period of 1 month,
only 1 million Ugandans hold passports. The government recently introduced e-passports and has given holders of old passports up to next year to update them. The government also intends to spread these services across regional offices around the country. The services will also be provided for Ugandans living in cities of London, Pretoria, Abu Dhabi, Copenhagen and Ottawa to serve Ugandans living abroad. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Botswana's main opposition, Umbrella for Democratic Change, UDC, says it plans to embark on a nationwide campaign to present what it calls compelling evidence that the October 23rd general elections were rigged. This comes after the Court of Appeals rejected the party's challenge of the outcome. Chief Justice Terence Ranowani declared President Mokawetsi Masisi won a 5-year term. The governing Botswana Democratic Party, BDP, won 29 seats, a majority in the National Assembly. UDC spokesperson Moeti Mawasa says the party has run out of legal options, but he tells VOAs that the UDC will take its case to the public.
As you probably might be aware, when we went to the High Court, the ruling party and the Independent Electoral Commission raised what in the legal parlance is called the point in limine. And consequently, the court ruled in favor of the ruling party and the IEC. We took this matter up because it was by majority decision from the panel of three judges. Two ruled in favor of the BDP and the IEC, and one in our favor. We appealed this matter, took it to the Court of Appeal, and when we go to the Court of Appeal, the same parties raised another point in limine that the High Court of Appeal did not have jurisdiction on this matter. We held a completely different view, and we argued along those lines. Our position is that, as an appealing court, there is no way that the Court of Appeal can say it cannot entertain appeal lodged with it or that lies before it, particularly a matter like this one, which is of national importance.
So what's the next line of action from your party?
No. This is the end of the road legally for our party. But what we are going to be doing is touring the country and explaining the whole situation. Because if you remember, we had not submitted the full evidence. So what we are going to do is share with the nation the fraud that took place in the election.
So if this is the end of the road for you, how effective will your campaign be taking it on the road?
It's going to be tough, not only for us, but for the country. You know, the expectation is that a country like Botswana will be moving more towards opening up itself up and strengthening its democracy. But ever since the entry of countries like Namibia and South Africa, our democracy has now become questionable. We take decisions that are not consistent with the democratic ideals. We have institutions like the IEC, which are not entirely independent. We have institutions like the Ombudsman, which report directly to Parliament and are not subject to parliamentary review. So those are the issues that we are going to be dealing with the public, creating awareness and channeling debate around those issues.
Do you think Matwana will accept this in the face of the overwhelming support they gave to the ruling party in the election,
which you challenged? The ruling party did not have overwhelming support. They did not. I mean, everybody, even from the surveys, everything, it was a very tight race. But the results of those elections did not suggest that. But even with the body of evidence that we have against the ruling party, it shows that indeed the ruling party stole this election.
That was UDC spokesperson Moweta Mawasa speaking with VOA's Peter Kloti. Tanzania's telecoms regulator says it has began shutting off mobile phone users who missed the deadline to register with biometric checks. 15 million users, a third of the country's subscribers, face being cut off. Tanzania says it's trying to fight fraud in electronic transactions, identity theft, and other forms of crime. Officials say cybercrime jumped by 82% in 2017. The deadline to register was January 20th. Users' fingerprints are captured alongside scans of their national identity cards or foreign passports. The fast-growing sector has been hit by tighter regulations and a price war among the operators in recent years that has escalated as they battle for market share. Mobile phone users complain the deadline is too tight, and some of Tanzania's political opposition worry that blocking mobile communications could disrupt the general election scheduled for October. The death of American basketball star Kobe Bryant has caused worldwide mourning, and Africa is no exception. But along with the grief, there are signs of new enthusiasm for a sport that has until now not taken hold in much of the continent. In March, promoters plan to launch the Basketball Africa League, largely inspired by the NBA. Nicolas Pinot has more from Paris.
Football is still the predominant sport in Africa and across most of the world. Promoters have been trying to grow basketball's presence on the continent for the past 20 years. And with a growing number of African players now in the American NBA, those promoters hope Africa will embrace the region's talents and efforts when the Basketball Africa League begins play in March. 12 African teams from Mozambique, Senegal, Egypt, Nigeria, Mali, Cameroon, and many more will compete. The rules of the game will be up to the standard of American and the world. The aim is to be excellent and take on the best of them. Amadou Galofal is the NBA Vice President and Managing Director for Africa. He is also the head of the ball.
Ultimately, we want to grow our business on the continent, and the Basketball Africa League is a professional basketball league. It's about building an industry and using basketball as an economic growth engine that is going to contribute to GDP of countries. The sports and entertainment industry and the creative industry in general contributes trillions of dollars in global GDP. So we want to make sure that Africa start to earn its part of this massive industry.
Morocco's AS Saleh Basketball Club was crowned African champion in 2017 and is among the 12 teams winning a spot in the ball. Helasumi Abdallah, AS Saleh's secretary general, is very eager to start the new season.
Pour nous, représenter notre continent, ça serait une fierté.
He says representing the African continent is a source of pride, and the team wants to present a good image. The National Basketball Association partnered with the International Basketball Federation, FIBA, to launch the new league. Among the challenges, the promoters face improving infrastructure, such as building more basketball courts, and influencing the region's governments to invest more. Anibal Manav is the head of FIBA Africa and board member of the BAL.
To solve this problem of infrastructure, we need the commitment of the government. For now, the best principle is to have public-private partnership. We believe that Congo will build an infrastructure, Guinea and Nigeria, and for next year, we believe that more countries we are going to build.
There is also a gender gap to address. Organizers are focusing on helping more women and girls gain access to the courts.
All our initiatives, we have, you know, boys and girls competing and training and learning from role models. We are committed to really growing our sport across gender. The WNBA has been around, you know, for since 1997. And the good news in Africa is the women's game is very strong.
Each ball team will play a schedule of more than 40 games. The Final Four tournament for the league will take place in Rwanda's capital, Kigali, around mid-year. Nicolas Pinault for VOA News, Paris.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Mokbere Yabaro, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Batty, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hey,
sports fans. Brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.